Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Solace of Shadows. Here, poets will be able to share a piece of their darkness with us without fear of judgment. I am Pam Ray, patiently waiting to see if the host of the show calls in or if somebody joins me. And in the meantime, I'll go ahead and just chit-chat with y'all. So, I am a poet on All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Now, tonight tends to be our dark poetry night, as you could probably tell from the intro. If you find that this is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. And also make sure if you get a chance to check out our poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And I would like to take this moment to welcome the lovely Weaver of Dreams, a.k.a. Kate, to the show. Welcome, Kate. Glad you could be here.
Thank you very much. Hello to you. And I hope you're having a lovely evening.
I am. A lovely, quiet evening. I'm not a big party person. But I am enjoying a lovely, quiet evening. I do hope that Robert will be joining us soon, and because, you know, whenever one of our hosts don't show up, I get worried that, you know, hopefully nothing's wrong with him.
Yeah.
You know, I hope he's feeling all right. But in the meantime, I'm glad to have you with me, because I figure us two ladies can definitely shoulder this show if need be.
No. Yes, no problem. He will turn up. He's probably got caught in traffic.
Probably. Yeah, right. You never know.
Yeah. No, you
probably
don't.
Enjoying New Year's Eve festivities.
Yes.
But for tonight's topic, this was actually, the topic was Robert's idea. He messaged me and he said, I want to do this show where the theme is cold. And people can either take it literally or they can take it metaphorically. And I grabbed a few different prompts, quotes, and pictures that conveyed that thought. And, oh, my goodness, you know, I like to say the phrase quality and quantity. And that's what we got here. I closed the contest off with 22 rights. But I honest to goodness think that the way people were responding, we could have easily gotten more.
Mm-hmm.
So yep,
that's
yep,
good.
Absolutely. It is. And I would like to welcome the charmingly late Mr. Robert M. to the show.
Yeah. Gotta be
welcome, Robert. Glad you could join us.
Thanks, Sam. Yeah, sorry about that. I got agitated and people, I mean, not agitated. I got sidetracked with people talking to me and about New Year's and all that. So my apologies.
Oh,
I am here. So, yeah, thanks for holding the fort. And, yeah, I saw that there was a lot of entries. And like you said, it could have probably, avalanched into a whole other group of poems there. Might even have to do a part 2. Who knows? But yeah, thank you everybody for showing up and being on the board, and thanks Pam for holding the fort, like I said. And hello, Kate, how are you doing?
I'm wonderful, thank you very much. I was muted there for a moment, but yes, I love New Year. It's just wonderful, brings up so many memories and emotions, so it's cool. We have a thing in our family where when the bells stop ringing at 12, my mother does this, she opens the window a little bit to let the old year out and the new year in. I think that's so cool.
Yeah, it's a cool, interesting custom. Very cool indeed. So I guess we should start off with poetry now, since we're kind of a little bit late. Well, I was. So where are we going, Pam?
Well, first off, we have Cold, Cold Heart by Damn It Dave. And Robert, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
All right, I'll try. The boys all called her beautiful. It didn't mean a thing. Her heart was so unmovable and never knew the spring. She stared at them with frigid eyes that tore their pride apart. And now nobody even tries to melt her cold, cold heart. It isn't hard to understand why her heart has turned to stone. Life didn't turn out how she planned, and she is all alone. Relationships have failed her so, and now she thinks it's smart, pretending she is ice and snow, and a cold, cold heart. So many men have used her that she now just plays the role of frosty and disdainful brat with ice cubes in her soul. The warmth she proudly used to share has chosen to depart. It's easier just not to care and own a cold, cold heart. And boom. I have to say that I agree with that sentiment. It's hard getting to that point to where you just don't care. But once you're there, then life becomes a lot simpler. I mean, of course, you still do care. Like, there's little things you care about. Like the people who are really close to you, you obviously do care about what happens to them. But everything, once you seal yourself off with that type of frigidity, it becomes less complicated. Like, things, like your mind becomes more clear as to what's most important and the people who matter the most to you. And you're still willing to let them in and occasionally warm you up. But yeah, I can understand the sentiment big time. That's a great poem, Dave. What are your thoughts, Kate?
I agree. This is very well done. And I take what you say about we can, you know, brick up the walls against everybody and keep ourselves safe by not allowing people in. But, you know, sometimes, unexpectedly, someone can actually really hurt you. Your guard's down for a moment, and no matter how cold you feel that you are, people can still hurt with their cruel words. So it's not an easy place to be at all. It can be safe, and it can be a rewarding for yourself so you don't have to think about other people, but so sad and so lonely. So yes, it's a terrible thing, but people have to go through it. People do feel they can't take any more interaction because it is just too painful. So beautifully done. It really brought that sentiment across. Thank you.
Yeah, yes, indeed. So what about you, Pam? What did you think about it?
I thought this was a great take on the chosen prompt. It's beautifully written with wonderful rhyme and flow. And, you know, it is so easy to just shut yourself off after years of being hurt over and over again. I like the repetition in this of the word cold, to melt her cold, cold heart, and has a cold, cold heart. You know, it really emphasizes the point. I thought he did a wonderful job of transitioning from the point of view of how the men all see her and to how she became the way that she is. You know, I really particularly like relationships that failed her so, and now she thinks it's smart, pretending she is ice and snow and has a cold, cold heart. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Yeah, very relatable indeed. Okay, thanks for that, Dave. So where are we headed to next, Pam?
All right. Up next we have In My Prime by Liquid Mind Forever. And it goes like this. How many times am I expected to turn the other cheek, to seek only the good, speak only when spoken to, or willingly lie silent in a desert of frozen regret? I've known the rush of fiery passion, the blush of first kiss, the banishment and neglect of solitary confinement. I have felt the sting of winter remorse among a chorus of amaryllis and chrysanthemums, when a quarter rest could hold out past my whole. And what a beauty have I left behind to watch wilt and curl hung over a white lattice portico ensconced, privately wishing for first blush the hush of shyness, past the moon stage into and beyond the sage of reason? How many lapels have I slipped into? In what Parisian bistros have I been left too oft forgot to coat and hat rooms while youth fantasized, still drunk on love's first ornamental corsage. Whether I be hung upside down to dry or pull apart petal by petal for amusement, the sheer thrill of holding me close, of placing my softness against your cheek, or luxuriating in your body in a ban of my fragrance. Nothing can bring back the hour of splendor in the grass of glory, in the flower we shall grieve not. How many summers have I known growing alone, listening to learn, learning to listen, and in glistening sun or pouring rain, again and again, untamed I remain a thorn to be reckoned. And what of my offspring? Have you seen the many hybrid passing themselves off as my progeny? In the blood of battlefields you have found me, on the flags flying their colors over coffins, on the flat of bugles trying to touch the lost. I am there. I am always there in the hearts and minds of loved ones grieving their sons and daughters, on the lapels of grooms taking their wedding vows, center stage of banquet tables, and on the threshing floor stomped and left for compost after the toast, during the roast, by the host coast to coast, and I am the most renowned. In full evening gown, satiny silk, crimson or fuchsia, regalia in full repose, I am always the poet's rose. End poem.
Wow. I have to say that's probably one of my favorite of Liquid Mind Forever's poems that I've seen so far, mainly because she kept the whole idea, like the picture, she matched it very well, like the prompt. She did a great job of keeping, like, of capturing you with the visuals and with the sentiments and just drug you through the whole poem, not letting you slip away from that thought about, you know, the beauteous flowers, so to speak. I really like the way that she used the flower as a metaphor of sorts in some ways, and then, and like, you know, figuratively, and then actually referred to the flower itself, like, physically. She went, like, back and forth, it seems. Like, where is that one part that I like? A lot. Let's see. Oh, how many summers have I known growing alone, listening to learn, learning to listen, in glistening sun or pouring rain, again and again, untamed I remain a thorn to be reckoned. I really like that line. And also, in the blood of battlefields you have found me, on the flags flying their colors over coffins, on the flat bugles trying to touch the lost, I am there. That is those two stanzas really got me and hit and latched onto me, and I'm not necessarily sure why, but I know there is a ton of beauty that was poured into this piece, and I'm glad that she got inspired to write for it. What are your thoughts, Kate?
Oh, I admire this one so much. I love the personification of the inanimate. I've always enjoyed that. Writing about painting is just great fun. But this is so beautifully done. I mean, she just keeps taking us back and back to what this flower or these flowers or have done. I mean, it's just, how many lapels have I slipped into? In which Parisian bistros have I been left? Too oft forgot, in coat and hat rooms, while you fantasized, still drunk on love's first ornamental corsage. Isn't that just wonderful? It's just totally, totally wonderful. And then you got to the bit about, I'm always there in the hearts and minds of loved ones, grieving their sons and daughters, on the lapels of grooms taking their wedding vows, center stage of banquet tables. Yes, I think, as you say, I think this is an amazingly well-written piece of poetry, and I'm really glad I got the chance to hear it. So thank you so much, Liquid Mind Forever. It was very enjoyable.
Indeed. What about you, Pam? What are your thoughts?
Well, I like what you both had to say. This is, as you said, Kate, great personification of the rose. But as you were mentioning, Robert, and I have to agree, it is, she took the chosen prompt both literally and metaphorically. Like, it is the rose, but the rose can also be that representation, that metaphor for a woman or a person who has gone through life and felt at times important and felt at times discarded. You know, there's such a sadness to this that it hits really hard, and a wonderful professionalism in the fact that she stayed almost like an extended metaphor, like throughout the theme stayed consistent. I really like the strength in the lines and the blood of battlefields. You have found me on the flags, flying their colors over coffins on the flat of bugles trying to touch a loss. I am there. I am always there in the hearts and minds of loved ones grieving their sons and daughters. You know, it speaks to me, and the whole poem speaks to me, and the whole idea of no matter how much a person is tossed away and pushed away, that they can rise up again and be there and be strong. So just a powerful write and very well done.
I agree totally. This is beautiful. All right. Thanks for that, Liquid Mind. Where are we going next, Pam?
All right. Up next, we have His Winter of Discontent by Mindful. And Kate, will you go ahead and give that a read for us, please?
Yes, certainly. My pleasure. His Winter of Discontent. Oh, beautiful picture. Ah, Mike. He cared once. Too much, perhaps. So much so that he's now lonely in crowds, ignored in any scene, a prop, an extra, cut, without him again. Her hand belie her birthday, in fact, her entire body does, but she feels her days slipping away. She reads alone, her coffee grows cold with each page turned. He shifts his gaze awkwardly for just a moment of eternity. He was hers, and she was wrapping up a page before turning to ask him where they could eat tonight, or if he wanted to just hang out at home. Or maybe catch that movie they wanted to see. But all he could do was look away and shake his head. What was he thinking? She thought it reassuring. A man would notice after her last year of heartbreak. He'd left in the night, only a note by morning remained, and it only confirmed his cowardice to actually tell her he was gone. Now she reads and swore herself off men. Who needs them anyway? As long as you can have her books and sanity, she could live without the bigger source of headache in her life, men. And then he noticed, and her heart shook its icy mantle, and she managed a smile as she thought how much she missed spontaneous dinner dates, movies with him, just hanging at home. And the moment was gone, just as she turned abruptly away, as he was second-guessing his decision to even glance at her. If only he'd seen this small sign, this fire on the snowy mountain, this thawing of a heart long frozen, maybe he would have warmed a bit too. But he turned, and in his haste to remain anonymous, he would never tell her about his favourite dive, movie, colour or season, which definitely wasn't winter. End poem.
Wow, that was really deep, and it also included kind of like introspection and also reflection. You know, he knew the mannerisms of this person he was speaking of, and they ended up going cold, and they were cold themselves. So when you get two cold people trying to make light or warmth of something, it's not very easy. But I have to say, that when two people who are frigid end up finding that spark or warmth or whatever it is that may be that allows each other to feed off of it, then it can actually become something great. In this case, it did not work out that way. But I liked the sentiment all the way through, as well as her hands belie her birthday. In fact, her entire body does. But she feels her day slipping away. She breathes alone. Her coffee grows cold, which each page turned. He shifts his gaze awkwardly for just a moment of eternity. He was hers, and she was wrapping up a page before turning to ask him where they can go eat tonight. I've been in that situation where, because I've been a cold and distant person for quite a while, but I've been in that situation where the other person was similar, and it's very, very awkward and rigid, and but it can produce something that's very warming and nice if given the chance. So this is a great peek into that, and very relatable in a lot of ways. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, this is great. Well, first of all, great read there, Kate. This was an excellent story, right? And as you said, quite relatable to many, I'm sure. I like that he went back and forth, showing us, what was happening between this couple, so that there was this idea that really no one person was to blame. It was the idea that they both had shut themselves off, that they both weren't honestly communicating with each other. And I like how he brings in that idea of that myth, that she starts to reveal her inner warmth, but he's already turned away and misses it. And I thought that end line really packed a punch. He would never tell her about his favorite dive, movie, color, or season. Definitely wasn't winter. It also kind of had an irony in it too, because he was a cold person too, and yet he seems almost to judge her for her coldness, he really captures well the awkwardness of that. He shifts his gaze awkwardly for just a moment of eternity. He was hers, and she was wrapping up a page before turning to ask him where they could eat together. It's that brief moment of happiness, whether real or imagined, that just kind of gets crushed. So excellent write and very well done.
That's a good take, Pam. What about you, Kate?
I can relate to this so much. I can totally. I mean, I would probably be so much happier if I could meet someone like me, a loner who didn't talk, and it would be perfect. I wouldn't feel guilty about not giving my attention as much as people seem to need it. And I probably wouldn't have been married three times either. So yeah, I can understand this. This just speaks to me so much. And as you said, Pam, it's lovely the way he worked between the two of them. They were both missing the signs, which is, again, very sad. I've often thought that we really can't ever give ourselves or be aware of people because we can't know what they're thinking. And I'm not saying being able to read each other's thoughts would be that wonderful either, because those stray thoughts would come in, wouldn't they? Oh, for goodness sake, stop talking. That kind of thing wouldn't be great. But how much easier a relationship might be if you could figure out what the other person was thinking. So yes, this is beautifully written about a problem that's actually very relatable.
Yeah, by more people than we could probably count. This is another great entry. Wow. So thanks for that, Mindful, for being inspired and entering the contest. Where are we off to next, Miss Pam?
Well, up next, we have Heart of Ice by Darkened Auras. And Robert, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
All right. Her lips, her eyes entice, but her heart is as cold as ice. She's been loved and let down, made to look like a clown by every boyfriend that came to her town. Now she quashes their dreams, won't get far with all of her requiems. Her trust is stretched thin, now she's guarded within, but I think that I may just break in. We're out on a third date. I'm looking for a lifelong mate. I hope she can tell me apart from those that had from the start. From those that she had from the start, I hope she'll. I'll be the one to melt her heart. End poem. Oh, yeah. That's This I actually comes from a wait. Judging by the picture, though, I don't know. From a place of benevolence. Yeah, so it's kind of went with a limerick this time. I should have read it in a limerick. Oh, well. I didn't realize it until I finished it. Sorry about that. But either way, the sentiment is there. And the thought, the ending is very nice. Like, you know, she's been through all kinds of crap. You know, she's been through so much. And he wants to let her know that he's different, and that he wants to try and, you know, actually make good on his words and be able to penetrate the frost, so to speak. And I think that a lot of times it's hard because they're just words most of the time. But if the person actually means it, like I said before, it could actually be something very strong and worthwhile. It has great potential if you can actually give the person what they need. So yeah, I thought that was great. Thanks, Dark Adoros, for that. What are your thoughts, Pam?
Yeah, it was I like the limerick form that she decided to write this in. It's got a juxtaposition to it because limericks are so bouncy and it's such a dark write, but I have to say that she put a lot of heart into that ending. And I like that she wrote this from the perspective of a young man or a man who wants to, you know, be that one to melt someone's heart, to be their lifelong mate. But this is lovely all the way through. And I have to say, with that picture, honestly, I would have written probably something like Murder in the North Woods of Wisconsin. And when I see a picture like that, but the fact that she saw it on a metaphor level and the idea of this woman trapped in her own iciness because she's been hurt over and over again, I thought was a really good eye. I really like especially the middle stanza, and her trust is stretched thin, now she's guarded within, but I think that I may just break in. So excellent write and very well done.
Indeed. What are your thoughts, Kate?
Yes, this is, there's so many of these. They're just so good. But yes, I can understand, again, you know, you can only get hurt so many times, and then you think, no, not again. Because it's not like, you know, dropping your favorite cup or, you know, getting a stain on your favorite dress. Your heart being broken is just bites away at you. It takes little bits of you and squashes them. So I can understand why you would feel guarded. But look, he's got to the third date. Now that's very promising, isn't it? And he's looking for something meaningful. He's not just there to act as a, you know, cheat a conquest. He actually seems to care. That's lovely. So I hope, I hope this one might be a true story. And I think it would be lovely if they got together. Thank you.
Here we are finding these sparks of warmth in the winter. Thanks for that, Dark Adoros. That was awesome. Where are we off to next, Miss Pam?
Up next, we have Swords of Damocles by Eric Svensson. And he was nice enough to supply us with a recording. So here we go.
swords of Damocles, fraught she fractured, raked snow cloak remnants closer, emaciated grips and grabs, garbled dabs, dagger discourse, remorse, grip, 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 minutes slurred, anger's mulled wine, seconds lured, fought, faucet, tracked, haystack hacked for more needles, blink, wink, blink, bat, scrutinize skull of wise owl, breath close, nocturnal vision saw, mother nature plaster, suspend stalactite teardrop by bitter teardrop, swords of Damocles, hurts dire delve, scornful stalagmites of neglect, pains zeitgeist ziggurat, unrequited love, butterflies scream, lower asphyxiated, mesh mash morning light spectre smudge, winged owl took flight from fossilized ribcage rafters, dangled at precarious angles, flame sharp pointed swords of Damocles, quick silver slivers tore me open, butterflied from the back, axed open by her hurt, she ripped out my frozen Viking warrior heart. End poem.
Well, Eric always has a way with words, I have to say. Yeah, I agree, Casey. His style is just off the chain. He is unconventional, to say the least. It often takes me one, or actually like two or three reads, to really digest his word work. But as far as what I can understand, the part that I appreciate most is a scrutinized scowl of wise owl, breath close, nocturnal vision saw, mother nature plaster suspended stalactite teardrop by bitter teardrop, swords of Damocles, hurts dire delve, scornful stalagmites of neglect. I can really appreciate that, scornful stalagmites of neglect, because a lot of times being cold isn't just about being mean to someone. Sometimes it's just a complete disregarding of their existence, or like I said, neglect, you know. And then pain, zeitgeist, ziggurats. I never see that word too often in there, ziggurats. That's actually a very awesome word. But yeah, to be forgotten, and, or to be put in like this this cage of, no, I'm not going to pay attention to you at this moment. Sometimes, I mean, there's some people that are into that, but sometimes it can be just very, very painful, and that's also a very cold way to treat someone. And I think he emphasized the cold in this, and his recitals are always awesome, and his, like I said, his word work is masterful and perplexing in a lot of ways. So thank you for that, Eric. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I really like what you had to say about how oftentimes it's not a straightforward meanness, but almost like the silence treatment, or even just not an acknowledgement, like the acknowledgement of saying, you know, I hear what you're saying, but that's not how I feel. Like there really is that whole idea. And I've been in relationships where the silent treatment was used as a form of manipulation, and it just is not easy to deal with. You know, I really like the imagery and metaphors in this, and even the shape of the poem, the fact that he centered it and had it shaped almost like it's one of those dripping icicles, I thought really added to the poem itself. You know, the slow and say drip, 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 and blink, blink, blink. Wonderful use of imagery and alliteration throughout. It really spoke strongly on those daggers of silence that can hurt the heart. But I tell you, my absolute favorite part was that very ending. And the reason I really liked with the butterfly from the back, axed open by her hurt, she ripped out my frozen Viking warrior heart, is I actually read an article or online article about different forms of torture that ancient Vikings would do. And they had one that was called eagle wings. And what they would do is they would take a person that when they were still alive, their enemy, they're still alive, cut open their back, and then take their ribs and bend them so that they, outside of the body, so that they looked like wings. And I thought that was so cool that Eric connected that whole idea of torturing somebody when they're still alive to the ancient Vikings, but put it in the idea of treating somebody like that in the context of breaking the heart emotionally. So excellent write and very well done.
Indeed. Thanks for a little bit of lore, Pam. I didn't realize it even had a a place there. Yeah, that's pretty interesting. Yeah, now looking at that last day, wow. Well, it's good to have more than one bowl of mashed potatoes here, I think. So what are your thoughts, Kate?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for that insight, Pam. That was, I love to learn, and I love the fact that we learn all the time. You're never too old to learn, somebody once told me. I don't know about that. I'm getting tired. But yes, this is just, as you say, the way he has positioned this gives it that much more of an impact. I had, when I first started writing, I just did line, you know, get the words out, don't worry about the actual look of the thing. But now I wouldn't want to write like that because it's so much more interesting to have the ins and outs and the different shapes and the different amount of words to each stanza. It's just wonderful. I like it. It's just an added dimension that makes everything so much more interesting. So yes, I also think that people who can switch themselves off to the point where nothing impinges, that they, you know, people can't get in. They just matter that little that they're not even making waves on the pool, on the pond. So that's quite hurtful for people. People don't like that. I don't think I'd even notice. But yes, I thought that was beautifully written. Swords of Damocles. Beautiful. So yes, I enjoyed that, Eric. Thank you so much for sharing.
Yeah, that is a good catch, too, about the format, Pam. I hadn't noticed that you mentioned it. I was like, oh, that's clever indeed. So thank you for that, Eric. Where are we headed to next? Miss Pam.
All right. Up next, we have Quieting the Monster by Paul Brott. And it goes like this. A tradition that many still don't understand, an island mystery from a long ago land, beseech the gods of volcanic fury, a red-haired virgin as proven and sure, covered in snow, dormant and quiet, no one wants to excite a riot. Encouraged by those both noble and wise, she sings native songs, preferably lullabies. This ceremony happens each new year, attended by many, the few who dare. She'll sing her songs of panic and suffering. Nobody needs their volcano erupting. End poem.
Wow. There was overtones of beauty and undertones of chaos. I really enjoy that, the picture of the mountain or volcano covered in snow. And then the title, too, Quieting the Monster. I thought this was a phenomenal piece, almost like a ritualistic piece even. It involves the traditions and a red-haired virgin, a proven insurer. It was just covered in snow, dormant and quiet. No one wants to excite a riot. So, you know, just to appease nature and to appease this great beast of sorts that lies in the ground. They do these rituals, and I thought that the wording here was awesome too. Encouraged by those noble and wise, she sings native songs, preferably lullabies, you know, like just to keep it calm, keep it quiet. I really enjoyed this piece, and I enjoyed the take that they on the prompt as far as like how they set everything up. So yeah, very well done, Paul. What was your thoughts, Kate?
Oh yes, this is an amazing tradition. It's a wonderful idea. You know, normally you would hear a tradition to do with something like a volcano that can destroy. It would be sacrificing the red-haired virgin, rather than letting her sing and keep the volcano quiet and not excite it at all. I thought that was lovely. It was much, much nicer than them throwing the virgin in. But I hadn't ever heard of this, and I thought it was a lovely idea that she'll sing her songs and keep the volcano quiet. Yes, beautiful. Yes, I enjoyed it very much, Paul. Thank you.
Indeed. And having read it, Pam, what were your thoughts?
I enjoyed this one. I can't help but think if anybody sent me to sing to a volcano, it would probably erupt just to get me to be quiet. This was a great story, right? So much thought put into just a few lines. I really like where you pointed out, Robert, the part that says, encouraged by those both noble and wise. You know, it really speaks on the idea of how, you know, nobility and wisdom doesn't always know what it's talking about. I like that it has a mythological feel, and yet there's also kind of a metaphor to it, too, on the idea of how quickly we will follow superstitions. I also liked the use of the word Führer being like the German word, mein Führer, my leader, the idea that the following the leadership, not only of the gods, but the people who are shoving her towards the volcano. Excellent, right, and very well done.
All right. So what are we off to next, Ms. Pam?
That is a good question. Let's see. Did I grab the next one? I think so. Let's find out. All right. And, oops, nope, sorry. Give me a moment here. I will bounce over to the next one. All right. And here we go. We have I Remember Icebergs by Star Eye 9. And Weaver, will you give that a read for us, please?
Yes, of course. My pleasure. I Remember Icebergs. I remember icebergs, the picture, the videotape, rewound to preserve some evidence of otherworldly habitat that once existed, an elusive figment of purest make-believe. I remember icebergs, like cliffs carved in ice, places where sparse populations would cloister, with immense bearskin reclined motionless in recesses, soundly sleeping between equinox and crystalline flakes, orbitals vibrating amid large, dreamy breaths. Then silence, exhalation of a gauzy impression that dissipates with increasingly distant memory, but still framed by a vibratory stillness and stark, bony chill. I remember icebergs. End poem.
Great read there, Weaver. I don't know. I like, I started taking this in the direction of, a lot of people are torn between global warming and whatnot. So, but this to me seems as though it could be like at some time in the future when icebergs no longer exist, you know, and this person is telling the story of they remember seeing them or they remember noting them, you know, in books and things like that, like they're a part of history, like they no longer are there. That's what it seems like to me, like it's speaking of it in passing. In that sense, if that's the case, I think that is a very awesome approach to speak from, because, you know, some may have their opinions on whether, you know, the validity of it or not. But if you were to think about the world without ice and stuff like that, and how sad it would be to have a future like this, to where you can only remember or look back upon such, you know, majesty in the world. And it's very sad in a lot of ways, but also I really enjoy this take. Like, I really enjoy the future, in my opinion, the futuristic, my interpretation of this piece. So yeah, wow. Yeah, it got me thinking, put it that way. I was thinking of it as like a movie almost in my head. It was playing. So yeah. So what were your thoughts, Pam?
I do enjoy poetry that makes me think and brings up awareness of social issues, because it does speak at, you know, on the idea of somebody who's looking back and remembering before global warming, before all the icebergs were taken away. And it has such a mournful feel to it. And it's not just about the icebergs. It's that, you know, if the icebergs melt, there becomes this flooding. You know, there are animals that are lost. And when animals are lost, you know, then it's that chain reaction. And that comes through, especially in her lines, places where sparse population would cloister with immense bearskins reclining motionless in recess, soundly sleeping between equinox and crystalline flakes. First of all, amazing imagery. And the fact that she brings up the bearskins, because one of the animals that will be most affected by global warming is the polar bear. So I really felt like this was definitely an intelligent write and very well done.
Indeed. It's a good catch there, Pam. So having read it, Kate, what did you think?
Well, I enjoyed reading it, for a start. I love a poem that just flows beautifully and doesn't make me stutter and, you know, read things wrongly, which I hate doing because I feel that I'm letting down the poet. I thought this was beautiful. And yes, can you imagine? I remember icebergs. So yeah, the pictures, the videotapes, an elusive figment of purest make-believe. Well, of course, if you said to somebody who'd never ever saw an iceberg or floating ice or frozen seas, do you think they would be able to understand how beautiful that was? They would only think that was cold. But it's not. It was, you know, the light shining off them and the immensity of it. Beautiful. You see, I still mourn the fact that I'll never see a dodo. I really do. I get inordinately annoyed that a beautiful, sweet, goofy thing like that is no longer with us because it was because it didn't understand the concept of danger and just saw people coming towards it thinking, what's this? And then they just kill them all off. It's awful. So I really enjoyed this. I thought it was beautifully written. And thank you, Star E9. It was wonderful.
Well, if it's any consolation, Weaver, I see dodos in my mirror often. but yeah, so we're not all extinct. but yeah, that's you know, you think the same thing as a platypus. Like a platypus is just a very odd, a very strange creature, and it's may even be a relative. I don't know. I haven't checked into it, but yeah, that's a good take there. So where are we off to next, Miss Pam?
All right. Up next, we have Numbing of Skin by Casey Day. And Casey was nice enough to supply us with a recording, so here we go.
Numbing of Skin. Told my therapist one time that I'm a parasite, and sometimes it makes me hate myself so much I want to die because I make people love me and steal away their light. I can't even help myself. Believe me. I have tried. She said that's what happens when you've been hurt. Generational trauma, that's just how it works. And I left and I never went back. It's not her fault. I just observed. I cannot blame my mother for what her father did to her. And I've been driving on empty for way too many miles, thinking maybe I'd feel better if I heal my inner child, but a voice inside my head says there's nothing wrong with me. I'm just another someone waiting to become somebody. If I close my eyes, I'll find a place that I know. It's not real, but it's the closest thing I'll ever have to home, where my dreams run wild and my darkest thoughts come to roam, where gods and monsters dance to a beat I call my own. If I go there now, the world might just go up in flames, but at least when I come to, there'll be no one left to blame. Then I'll dance with the devil, just because he knows my name. Watch the world flicker as I slowly fade away.
Wow. Well, thank you for that, Casey. It's always nice to have SoundCloud as well to go with the work. It's like Eric's work is awesome, too. So, yeah. This is kind of ended in a blaze. You know, there is a touch of frigidity in there when it comes to it, like emotional distance and frigidity with, you know, her mother. And I mean, that's probably the worst is generational trauma. It's just terrible. And like you got to, it's hard to be the one to break the cycle, like, you know, to be the one who leaves behind a legacy of, you know, warmth and caring and things when you have all of these burdens and things tossed upon you, and when you have all this darkness that you've been holding back and fighting yourself to try to stay true to the next generation. And not unload all of your, either what you would refer to as shortcomings or, trauma or baggage and load it onto the next generation. It is good to delve in emotional truth, but to kind of like destroy a childhood or to share too much or to not carry enough, it's always very damaging, and you know, speak from experience, obviously. But I felt this was very, very personal, and if not, it was a very great depiction on the frigidity and then the fire that lies beneath in the chaos that awaits. So yeah, thank you for that, Casey. That was just my take on it, and I thought it was awesome. What are your thoughts, Kate?
Oh, yes. Blimey. Beautifully. SoundCloud was wonderful. I love your voice, Casey. It was lovely. But I get that first stanza. I totally relate again. You make people care for you. You can't help it. It's just the way you are. You make people care for you because you like to entertain or you like to make people laugh or whatever. But the minute people start to become interested or move too close, that's it. You're off. That's enough. You know, you can't take that intimacy. And again, what do you do? I mean, can you change this? I once, because I don't sleep, I only get about 2 hours a night, I went to a therapist to see if there was anything they could do to help. I couldn't talk. I just cried. There was nothing I could say to him. And I just said, no, it's not any point. Why would you sit and watch me cry for an hour? There is no point. So I can understand all of these pains and the way people feel about themselves. And it takes a lot to get out from it. And I think all you have to remember is you have to care about yourself as much as you care about other people. And when you can do that, then you can open yourself up a little bit and take a little chance, put that one toe out into the world and be brave. So thank you for sharing that. I hope it isn't, I hope it isn't a fact that that is what's happened to you. I hope this is just your wonderful imagination, because it's very sad.
Yeah. You got to watch out sticking them toes out, though. You never know when them frigid stalagmites will fall out. Like Eric's going to be waiting. That was a great comment there, Kate. What about you, Pam? What were your thoughts?
Well, just to let you know, the chances of a stalagmite falling on you is not very likely, because they grow from the ground.
Well, I mean, there's a way, Pam. I mean, I'll find a way. Like, that's just...
You'll throw yourself on top of the stalagmites.
Yeah, I'll get picked up by a tornado and it's thrown into it or something.
There you go. If anybody could have a talent for that, it would be you. Absolutely. I like it. But no, I have to say, this is a powerful rite. It's powerful. It's emotive. It has a raw honesty to it. I like how it speaks on generational trauma and it speaks on healing and how the idea of healing isn't this easy and flippant journey. And not every process of healing works for everyone. I like that she brings in the fire at the end. I thought that was a great touch to the idea of the way that ice can burn, that coldness can burn. I really like this all the way through. I particularly like, though, if I close my eyes, I'll find a place that I know it's not real, but it's the closest thing I'll ever have to a home, where my dreams run wild and my darkest thoughts come to roam. You know, wonderful rhyme and flow, great imagery, and a wonderful dark thought on the idea of realizing sometimes we just need to escape into our dreams. So excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, just sometimes to escape the frigidity, you just need to set everything on fire.
there you go.
All right, where are we off to next, Ms. Pam?
Well, up next, we have a poem by Weaver, which is called Cold White Light, and I'll repost it. So here we go. And Weaver, you are nice enough to supply us with a SoundCloud, so here we go.
I am a consummate actress, a chameleon in human form. Although we are only what others conceive us to be, in my mother's eyes, I am a grave disappointment. No husband or children. To my limited amount of friends, I am the center of attention, sharp, witty, amusing. At work, I am dedicated to doing the best job I can. But inside, all is hollow, allowing no one near me uncaring, as cold as ice, holding them at the gate. It started when Father left. He didn't take me with him. All I knew was Mother's hate, which corroded my empty soul. Until now, when I simply want to be alone.
Wow. Yeah. That's very, very deep and heart-wrenching, obviously. This, as like you said, Weaver, touches back on that generational trauma. So I can see that you could relate. In this, like, I really like this because it shows you the aspects of self. Like, it shows you the different shadows that we cast when in the company of others. And I, like, in my mother's eyes, and then you said to my limited amount of friends and at work and inside, you know, so you share from many aspects, you know, like many aspects of yourself in the different company. And like, you know, it's been said before, we wear different faces or masks depending on who we're around. And you even explain the origins of such, like, you know, your father left and didn't take you with him, and you were left in like a cesspool of hatred, basically, and withered and corroded your soul. So this is one of those that I can also relate to, obviously, because we even know tragic upbringings have a way of hardening one's heart and making us colder as people, and forces you to grow up very quickly. And you've displayed that sentiment here very well. It's very sad because I from what I know of you as a person, obviously you seem like a very cool person and very you're pleasant to be around. I enjoy your company, and I enjoy your compassion and your ability to share yourself with us and to be able to relate to other people and give your opinion on their work. So I'm glad to have met, you know, you, and I'm glad that you're able to share this with us, but also it makes me sad to know that, you know, people like yourself obviously have endured stuff like this. So thank you for sharing that piece, and it matched the prompt very well.
Thank you.
What are your thoughts, Pam? You're very welcome.
Yeah, this is another powerful, right? Beautiful and emotive. You know, again, it speaks on trauma suffered. You know, I just really like the strength in your lines and how you point out that, yeah, you know, some people you just can never make happy. In my mother's eyes, I'm a grave disappointment. No husband or children. To my limited amount of friends, I am the center of attention. Sharp, witty, amusing. And oftentimes it's with our friends, with the people who become like family to us, that we're more able to be our relaxed and open self. You know, this is an excellent write all the way through. I have to say, for me, that I think the most relatable part was the ending, and it really showed how this girl became the way she was. And for me, it was very relatable because, you know, the father leaves and the she's left with the mother's hate. And I, you know, me, I had the opposite thing where my mother left. And after my mother left, I really had to learn to control my emotions as a child, which is not an easy thing to do as a child. And it affects you because anytime I lost control of my emotions, anytime, you know, I just got angry or sad about something, I had to be told in that judgmental tone, you're just like your mother. And of course, you know, looking back at the depression, everything my mom went through, I know that she was actually a strong person. And being compared to her should have been a compliment, but it wasn't because, You know, it's that tone of voice that people use. And oftentimes, and I didn't mean to go off on that little tangent there, but, you know, I wanted to show that I really related to that part of your poem. And oftentimes, you know, we really pick up on those tones that people use, and when they put us down in that way that you know, makes you just feel like you're not a worthy person. So just a powerful write, Kate, and very well done.
Thank you. Very kind. Yes, I think this kind of thing is very helpful because people need to know they're not on their own. Not mm-hmm. only people, everybody, you know. I honestly believe that people should have to sit some kind of an exam before they're allowed to bring children up because they do it so badly.
Yeah.
You know, not all people, obviously. If you had a wonderful childhood, then you would be a wonderful parent. But an awful lot of people are being harmed when they shouldn't be, because children should be loved and should be looked after. So it's kind of off-putting, isn't it, really? And yes, I love to make people laugh. It's like my favorite thing in the world. I am the consummate comedian. I just love doing it. So that's one thing. My humor, my own sense of humor has taken me through a lot. It's got me into a lot of trouble, I must admit.
Yeah.
And it's also got me out of a lot of trouble. So it's one thing I have, which I love. And thank you for your comments. Very kind.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing. That's the reason I made the Solace of Shadows a long time ago, is so people could come and share things like that. So, yeah, thanks to Gene. And we were able to come together with that. So I'm glad that you have a platform now. You have so many poets you can share your stuff with like these different shows. It's awesome. Everybody's show is like awesome.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Pam, so where are we headed to next?
All right, up next we have Salt by Beautiful Blade Mars, and she also supplied us with a SoundCloud, so here we go.
Salt. We were young, growing up in Salt Lake City, just two little kids against a world we couldn't see. Pity, everyone so busy. Couldn't see our future through a gritty past that never made sense, not knowing how to grab onto fate. Too late to turn back in a jumble of words thrown together with rhymes that just don't quite jive. Pause. Let me restart. Take a breath. Stop trying to conform to a fit that isn't me. When I was a child, the world was too cold for my skin. I'd break out in these purple rashes that took hours to leave, thin lines crocheting across my flesh like they belonged there. It was as if the sun had ice cubes for fingers and grabbed onto me any time I went outside. Instead, I spent my time indoors, learning to come alive with the things that I created. I didn't know what the future held, but I knew there was hope for one. The first time I made cookies, we were out of salt. The next time, I used too much. Both were lessons, and I learned the importance of moderation. I started losing my sight at 13, slowly going blind in a world not meant for me. I remember wondering if the salt in my tears would make for bad water. Sorry, that doesn't even make sense, but it was a thought that stuck with me for years now. I live my life in darkness, but I can still picture the way patterns crisscross my complexion when it's cold. I moved to Minnesota, fell in love with the snow on my tongue, and stopped caring about what I had lost, as I had new hope for what I could gain. End poem.
Wow. That was quite the journey. She started off like with almost like slam poetry, you know. She came out with a fierce groove, and she ended up saying, "Pause, let me restart, take a breath, stop trying to conform to a fit that isn't me." This entire poem, as personal as it seems, was stark and it was beautiful at the same time. And I like that she included these stories about when she made cookies. Like the first time she made them, she was out of salt. The next time, I used too much. Both were lessons, and I learned the importance of moderation. So, you know, life experience taught her much. And then even when things were starting to get her down, and even, you know, losing her eyesight, she started losing her eyesight at 13, and all the coldness and all the frigidity that she was experiencing, and even like where she said, "I'd break out of these purple rashes that took hours to leave, thin lines crocheting across my flesh like they belong there." It was as if the sun had ice cubes for fingers and grabbed on to me anytime I went outside. I mean, that is a very limiting and not just painful, but there's a word I can't think of. Anyways, it's a very tragic ordeal that she was depicting here. And yet, through all of that, she says, "I moved to Minnesota, fell in love with the snow on my tongue, and stopped caring about what I had lost as I had new hope for what I could gain." So her mindset, through all of the cold, she still was able to keep that spark of humanity and still able to spread that message of hope. So I give her kudos for that. And it was a wonderful SoundCloud as well. She read it very well. So thank you, beautiful Blade Mars, for sharing that. What were your thoughts, Weaver?
Oh, wonderful. First of all, her voice is absolutely beautiful. And the amount of expression and emotion she put into this write was incredible. It gave this like 100% more impact because of the way she read it and told us the story. I thought it was absolutely, it was just amazing, amazing. And all of these things happening, the way she explained about when she could see what was happening to her skin, of course she was upset. And then we get to the point where she's not able to see anything. So that's why she's got, she started to think, well, what the heck? You know, I can't make any changes. I'm just going to stop caring about what I've lost and just make the most of what I can have now. And I thought that it was so amazingly good of her to give us that little list at the end of her poem. That was a lovely thing to do, not leaving us feeling, I mean, obviously we're feeling terrible for her, but she didn't leave us feeling that bad. She gave us that little bit of hope, which I thought was lovely. Very, very generous. So, yes, I'm so glad that you wrote this, and I'm so pleased that I got the chance to hear you reading it. So thank you.
Indeed. I am very glad that she was inspired to write for us and submit a SoundCloud. It was wonderful. What were your thoughts, Pam?
Yeah, this is a beautiful write. It's emotive. It's thoughtful. There's so much to delve into. I always imagined, I always thought that I think one of the worst allergies to have would be to be allergic to sunlight. You know, I mean, I'm not a person who goes outside a lot, but when you do have to go outside, to know that you would have a reaction or break out anytime you were out in the sun. I also, you know, and I feel like the attention to detail in this has to be either all or in part a true story. And I imagine, like, when she opens up with, "We were young growing up in Salt Lake City," and I imagine, you know, Salt Lake City, Utah, being a highly Mormon in population, Growing up in a Mormon community, a high religious community, and you know, not feeling like you fit in and trying to find that someone else that you fit with. I really like the imagery where she describes the rashes. I'd break out in those purple rashes that took hours to leave, thin lines crocheting across my flesh like they belonged there. And then the part about learning to make cookies, and it really feels like the whole idea of going through the ups and downs of life and going through the journey of life to try to find yourself. So just a beautiful write and very well done.
Yeah, I'm pretty impressed and humbled by the awesome work that we had show up for this contest. So that was another phenomenal piece. Where are we going next?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I have to agree with you. Just absolute quality in this contest. You know, and it's funny because that, honest to goodness, if you ever wanted to do another cold show, we could, because originally I downloaded like 50 pictures and quotes that fit with the theme. And I thought, well, that's just way too many. So I bumped it down to like 15. I mean, yeah, it was just great stuff. Great stuff. All right. So up next we have Winter by Diane D. And also we have a SoundCloud for this. Here we go.
Winter by Diane D. A chill December wind scattered the morning mist and rested on the vale like a bungling drifted snow. No cloud cluttered the sky, a sky as black as ink, strew a gray threatening murk as a crisp fog breathed slowly. Winter's punishing storms smothered the hills. A wreath of ice and frost adorned the miserly moon. Cold stood tall and motionless, like a smokestack paralyzed. Pellets of flurries cannonade the snow cap. She stomped in on bear's paws, clomping where earth meets sky, to claim her prey, sucking verglas from their pores. Haunted by a deepening gloom, touched by a fading autumn light, prisoners of the wind join their lives to the sky. End poem.
Wow. I really liked a lot of her word choices here. Like words that I'm unfamiliar with even. Let's see. Cannonade. I'm not sure what that is. Verglas. I knew what it was, but I cannot remember. And what is the other one? In any case, I like the environment that she set up here, and like each verse seemed to kind of take you deeper and deeper into her the maelstrom of metaphor. And I really like cold stood tall and motionless like a smokestack paralyzed, pellets of flurries cannonade the snow caps. And then winter's punishing storm smothered the hills, a wreath of ice and frost adorned a miserly moon. I like the word miserly. I can relate. But, you know, the way that she just uses the cold in such a creative fashion, like she captured like the essence of the picture, like hardcore, like she just took it all the way to the depths and back, you know, with her descriptions and with her storytelling, and in the ending, haunted by a deepening gloom, touched by a fading autumn light, prisoners of the wind join their lives to the sky. I thought that was a phenomenal way to end it. And I thought she did a great job in reading it. And I'm glad she was inspired to write for the contest. What did you think, Kate?
Oh, it's lovely to hear her. Lovely. I haven't heard Diane D for such a long time. Yes, beautiful. I love the sound cloud. I love the merry little tune in the background. That was so cool. It was bouncing along. I love that. But that first stanza, a chilled December wind scattered the morning mist and rested on the vale like a bungling drifted snow. That's lovely. She does do a beautiful, beautiful job with her her work. But again, we have, I'm a last stanza lass, and I love this one. Haunted by a deepening gloom, touched by a fading autumn light, prisoners of the wind joined their lives to the sky. Ah, beautiful. Yes, I really enjoyed it. I think she just made everything sound so interesting with all those wonderful words that she put in there, which I will now go off and try and find the meaning of. But yes, I thought you did a beautiful job. And lovely to hear you again, Diane.
Yeah, buddy. That was pretty awesome. I just continue to be impressed by all this. What were your thoughts, Pam?
I thought this was beautiful, a wonderful personification of winter. I just really like her word choices. Cannonade is a rapid gunfire. And so, like, she just always seems to know which word to choose. And I've written with Diane before, and she really puts a lot of thought into her word choices. And I like how she brings out the darkness and the anger and the personality of winter, you know, with the she stomped in on bear's paws, clomping where earth meets sky to claim her prey, sucking virgulous from their pores. You know, the idea of winter as a goddess riding on that polar bear, coming in on that bear. You just imagine that and the absolute terror of it, because while winter is beautiful, it is also a force to be reckoned with. Yep. And and that picture, that's actually right outside my bedroom window. I took that picture the day after we had that big snowstorm. That is a birch tree that before the snowstorm was standing up straight, and by the time the next morning was bent over in front of my window. So
Whoa.
That just gives you an idea of what it looked like last week in Wisconsin.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't expect that.
Yeah.
that's a nice little tidbit there, I guess. Well, I wouldn't say nice, but that's an interesting tidbit. Wow. Well, that's a nice picture, though. While it lasted, I guess.
Oh, yes.
Well, thanks for that, Pam. And yeah, you have some insight on the issue.
Definitely.
Thanks, Diane D., for your submission, and I'm glad you were inspired. Where are we off to next, Miss Pam?
All right. Up next, we have Fall from Grace by Stelina. And Robert, will you give that a read for us, please?
I will try. All right. Drifting through fragments of frigid lace, redundant remorse ensues for her fall from grace. Disgraced and shunned from heaven's gate, cast out for lust which she could never sate, falling through clouds of shame and derision, seducing the forbidden by her own admission. Is loving another a sin? She has to wonder, for it is her own heart which is torn asunder. From feeling something she could not control, a joy that leapt to him from her very soul, why should she now be punished more when her weeping wounds are open and raw? The howling wind caresses her bare, stinging skin, once tainted by shameless, searing strokes of sin. from hands that were meant for another's pleasure. Yet the thrill of his touch was beyond mortal measure. Willingly would she return again to his arms, to swim in the wild, wanton wet waters of his charms. There is no doubt, within her yearning, yielding core, she would shame the devil to be with him once more. Now she's exiled in the chill of a bleak, bitter night, where only darkness resides, cruelly ousting in poem. Wow. Stellina never disappoints. Never disappoints. She always brings that darkness, whether we're talking about sunshine or rain or snow. She always seems to be on point, on prompt. Wonderful. Her rhyme is always impeccable. Her word choices are, like I said, she's just a very impressive poet. Her and Arcana, I've come to meet both of them when I came back, and they are two of my favorite poets, as far as being able to delve so deep into darkness and to rhyme so well. Like, they do so well, and even together, like, as in unison, their work is awesome. In this one, it's hard to pick a favorite part, because I do like the drifting through fragments of frigid lace, redundant remorse ensues for her fall from grace, disgraced and shunned from heaven's gate, cast out for lust which she can never sate. So, cast down from heaven for the sin of lust. I'm sure that there's a story there. I really appreciate this piece, and appreciate the fact that she's just always like on it with her poems. Like, she just churns them out, like she's like a poem machine. and whenever she gets inspired to write something for my shows, I always look forward to it. And this is no different. I'm glad that she decided to write for the show and that she was inspired. So thank you for sharing that with us, Stellina. Pam, what were your thoughts?
Yes, Stellina always just brings the top-notch darkness, for sure. I've always been a huge fan of fallen angel stories, and because they already have a depth to it, and they have, they make you think about how people are judged for what others may consider sins, and what it must be like to be an angel and then to fall. But she makes it even deeper, because she takes this look at this idea of this angel who just wanted to love, to wanted to experience physical pleasure, and was cast down for that. And I like that she asks the question, is loving another a sin? She has to wonder, for it is her own heart which is torn asunder. And then the idea that she's punished not only by the other angels or by a higher power, but that she's punished because her love is rejected, her heart is broken. As you said, there's great rhyme and flow in this, and there's a certain strength in the end. There is no doubt within her yearning yield core, she would shame the devil to be with him once more. I really like those lines, and the idea of standing up and thinking for yourself and saying, you know what, this is the person I want to be with. And so powerful, right, and very well done.
Yeah, oftentimes those takes a lot of guts to just stand up for what it is that you believe in. What are your thoughts, Kate?
Oh, as you say, she never disappoints. Incredible. I just love her work, and Arcana as well. They do beautifully together and separately. But it's just so measured and so beautifully written. And as you say, every word has its has its depth and it's, and it needs to be there. So she does it so well. I can, again, you see, I can understand this. You can get so tied up in the emotion of love and the sensations of love. If you're an addictive personality, which I am, you've got to be very careful, because you are so easily thrown, falling through clouds of shame and derision, seducing the forbidden by her own admission. Yes, there are times when love can be wrong. Of course, we know that. It's the way our horrible system, our horrible bodies work sometimes. So, yes, there are times when, no, it's not admissible. But she basically gets you on the side of the sinner. You know, you're going, oh, well, you know, for goodness sake, it's not a bad thing, is it, to love somebody? So it's very clever. I love it. And very sensual. Beautifully written. Ah, a delight. So once again, Delina, thank you so much for sharing that. It was wonderful.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, she does get you on her side. She has a way of doing it. What about you, Pam?
Oh, I already commented on it.
Oh, sorry about that. I had to stir my mashed
potatoes. No.
Thank you. So... where are we off to next?
Up next, we have A Bitter Terror That Hides in the Cold by D.L. Lewis. By this unhinged craziness, I sing praises to dead rabbits. Embodied by the craven of sin, their whispers exist in me. No dawn can avert me. Just leave me here in this forbidden place. All I want is this gnosis to leave me on this crest of soaring Alps. The bliss of this nameless nightmare will make me dwell on its snow-covered form. All I can discern are gateways leading into the deepest frozen infernos. None of them are willing to torment me, as I am already disturbed. Is this the stead where God has died? It seems to be fervently so. No moon has ascended here. Only a pallid eye like sun down at me. Only this bitter cold shows me a real horror, a dreadful worry that no monster has to reside in it. Vacancy has made the surrounding atmosphere eerily still. All there was a weak hum of a chirping bird whistling in the obscurity. Every tree was massless, nameless, shapeless, confined to hostile spaces that grew ahead. This eon, a limitless eternity of interminable suffering, has a beckon to endure forth indignant cries erupt from my flaccid throat, sounding for a sob that somehow can hear. All there was a deafening hush with that ominous bird twitting in the distance, so I believed. Within a moment, a rumbling of devastating howl was booming and crashing directly in front of me. It was indeed not a wolf, for this was something far more malicious than any canine species. I could not perceive it with my naked eyes, for it was just another aspect of the void that cannot be witnessed. Its presence did not want to be detected. It just desired for me to know its existence is here. Inconceivably, I was not able to go face to face with this utterly horrific thing that was invisible before me. Oh, the great madness and fright was ravaging me, rendering me psychotic and deranged. Discordantly, this nemesis splendor was starting to manifest its fondness for my presence. Barren and bleak, when it invoked its cryptic witchcraft, withering away my insecurities to be frightened, the bottomless pit was for me to be eternal, wanting to enthrone my image as the coming Lucifer. I was conceived to become the supreme embodiment of blasphemy for the emergence of hell itself. My inner consciousness was being plunged by the menacing screaming as my hearing was being bombarded by piercing sounds of a violin shrieking, the god-awful shriek of these horribly shrill screams were just the roar of hysterical laughter. Chaos. Oh, that glorious disarray. I was condemned to be impelled with an absurd compulsion for madness. End poem.
Well, that was quite a breathy piece there. He certainly had a lot to say in this one. And what I really liked about it was the kind of embodiment of the madness and the, like, for example, when he said, let's see, within a moment, a rumbling of a devastating howl was booming and crashing directly in front of me. It was indeed not a wolf, for this was something far more malicious than any canine species. I could not perceive it with my naked eye, for it was just another aspect of the void that could not be witnessed. Its presence did not want to be detected. It just desired for me to know its existence is here. So, to me, it seemed as though, like, the battle with the darkness, with you know, depression and things like that within, and the madness that ensues thereof. So, I really liked his description there because that is very fitting. Like, a lot of times, I will be feeling okay. For example, this is just from my perspective. I'll be feeling okay. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, just comes this horrible, horrible feeling, this great, weighty, like overbearing, just either darkness or whatever you want to call it, just out of nowhere. And you can't see it. You can only feel that it's there. And I really can appreciate his the way of his description of such. So, that was awesome. And then his wording, like his verbiage was great. The great madness and fright was ravaging me, rendering me psychotic and deranged. Discordantly, this nemesis splendor was starting to manifest its fondness for my presence. So it seems as though there comes to be this cycle of addiction, but the darkness is so fond of you that it keeps returning and coming back. And that's what it feels like. It feels like as if it's just there to menace you. And for him to be able to put that in this, like in such a way that's so artistically creative and yet relatable, it's very commendable. And I appreciated it all the way through. And it was a great read, Pam, because there was a lot there to read. So thank you, D.L. Lewis, for being inspired and submitting that for us. What were your thoughts, Kate?
Well, first of all, Pam, you did an absolutely wonderful job of reading that. It was incredible. It was really well done. And this, in my head, I'm seeing a snowball rolling down a hill and becoming bigger and bigger and bigger. Oh, you know, that's how it made me feel. It was craziness unleashed and allowed to just go. I think it's absolutely amazing. I have so much admiration for people who have this kind of imagination. It's absolutely, it makes me feel, well, it doesn't make you feel inadequate, I must admit, it doesn't, but it makes me feel very envious. I think it's wonderful, I really do. You were talking about feeling that you could feel wonderful and or fine or even just calm, and then suddenly something just hits you. This happens occasionally to me, but it happened once. I was at a party, and it's only about a year ago. I was at a party, and everything was wonderful. We're having a great time. And then suddenly, from nowhere, came this absolute terror, this belief that something was going to fall on me from a great height or whatever. But it was just so scary. And I stood up. I walked out. And I started to walk home. And of course, people followed me to find out what I was doing. But so I could understand this feeling of you're being, what's the word? You're being, I can't think of the word. I'm really sorry about that. I can't think of the word. But you're the one who's going to be the next devil or the next Lucifer because you fit the bill. You're being I still can't find the word. But yes, I think this was absolutely amazing. Amazing. I just enjoyed it so much in a creepy way. For sure.
Thanks for that, Kate. Yeah, you might be thinking of targeted. I don't know if that's the right word.
Groomed.
Groomed. Oh, groomed. Yeah, that's even better. Okay.
I knew there was a word somewhere.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's an interesting experience, to say the least. So, yeah, very dreadful. What are your thoughts, Pam?
This was a great dark ride. Before I comment, I'd like to mention that I really appreciate Casey hanging out on the board all night for during the show. And I like the comment that she made in LNP about this poem. That is such an interesting way to write. I enjoyed the way he formed images to paint his thoughts and kept this sort of anxiousness about it all. And she's right. You know, he really captures this sense of anxiousness, that sense of fear. I like how this comes across as someone going into that descent into madness. It grabs your attention right away from that opening, those opening lines, by this unhinged craziness. I sing praises to dead rabbits embodied by the craven of sin. Their whispers exist in me. And how it just keeps getting darker and darker until you're facing that invisible darkness, that horrific beast. You know, just an excellent write and very well done.
Indeed, the personification of chaos is always very interesting to me. Okay, so I think we probably have time for one more. And so where are we going next, Miss Pam?
Well, up next, we have Queen of Pain by Punk Poet, the Punk Poet 007. And Kate, will you give that a read for us, please?
Yes, certainly. Queen of Pain. Echoing the space insanity left behind, memoirs make me travel back in. I hear me screaming late into the night. What stays hidden leaves a lethal bite. I battle with the madness, taking control. I cut into my wrists, that's flowing sorrow. I can't feel anything, so I keep cutting. My rage, once buried, quickly budding. I hate the sight of the sun burning down. Queen of pain and scars adorn my crown. Hatred I'm wearing is a designer fashion. My passion for death is steady flashing. I looked inside searching for my identity. All I could find was the decay of brutality. Dreams are nothing but two-faced liars, caught slumbering in nighttime's desires. Where's the silent sanctuary that I seek? Beneath a pale moon, as shadows creep. Falling ebony showers, the witching hour, dead tree branches bloom wilted flowers. I give in to the dark side shade of my mind, a blueprint only agony could have designed. Stifle every voice bickering inside my head. I see my destiny as is laid out just ahead. Appear suffering won't come to an end. My shattered heart will not ever mend. Bliss a mirage slipping the distant horizon. Velvet dreams fade into reality that's slicing. The punk poet, always be punk, always be drunk on poetry. End poem.
That was an interesting little end there. Yeah, I agree, Casey. That picture is something else. So the format is very neat and succinct, and it's awesome, obviously. The rhyming is great. The word choice and subject matter, obviously, are phenomenal. Where is this? I looked inside searching for my identity. All I could find was the decay of brutality. Dreams are nothing but two-faced liars, caught slumbering and nightmares, desires. I mean, I can understand that feeling big time, because I was always afraid to sleep because of that. But this part right here, where's the silent sanctuary that I seek beneath a pale moon as shadows creep, falling ebony showers, the witching hour, dead trees, branches, bloom wilted flowers. I thought that was dark and beautiful. I could picture it in my head so easily. And I always have a great deal of respect and appreciation for people who could do that, who can make something so dark, yet it also be beautiful at the same time. So I'm glad that the punk poet 007 decided to share their piece with us and that they got inspired to write. So, yeah. What were your thoughts, Pam?
Yeah, this is definitely, it's beautiful darkness. Wonderful imagery, a really emotive write. Great rhyme and flow. I'm glad somebody was inspired by that picture. Another top-notch quality. I hate the sight of the sun burning down, queen of pain and scars adorn my crown. Hatred I'm wearing is a designer fashion. My passion for death is steady flashing. You know, I look inside searching for my identity. You know, here's this person that's struggling with their own brokenness, their own ugliness, and trying to escape from it. And you can really see the struggle there. So excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, that's a good catch, Pam. Yeah, great analysis. What about you, Kate, having read it? What did you think?
Oh, this again. I mean, these are just amazing, aren't they? We are so lucky tonight. So much. Oh, yes, this again is just wonderful. I battle with the madness, taking control, cut into my wrists. That's flowing sorrow. And we know that happens. We know people can be so upset and annoyed and hate themselves so much that that is just a way to get all that out. It's just, the mind is a scary thing. It really is. If all your hormones are right and your life is right, then you can bounce along happily. But just one tiny little thing out of place or out of kilter, and your mind just takes you somewhere you don't want to go. I don't sleep, and I didn't realize that I had a problem until my daughter said, you know, what is the problem? And I said, well, sleep has to kind of creep up on me and catch me while I'm doing something else, because I can't actually fall asleep because I hate the feeling. And I hate the nightmares that I have. So, you know, you can understand how your mind can make you feel absolutely terrible. And there's nothing you can do, really, until you get the right medication or whatever. But this was just wonderful. And like you, I love that little last bit, the punk poet, always be punk, always be drunk on poetry. I thought that was a lovely ending. So, yes, a very clever, again, very clever work and beautifully written. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Mm-hmm. So we probably have time for maybe one or two. We will indulge ourselves, I believe. Anything that we didn't get to will be carried over to our other shows, so don't worry. And I might even make a part two of this show. We'll see. So Pam, do you have anything you want to read? If there's time, I'll read one and we won't bother commenting on it, but.
Well, I'll just go ahead and I'll share my write. And then, as you said, the other ones, we can find a place for them. This is, and it's not on topic. It was actually written to the contest I had with the Seven Deadly Sins, and this was written to Wrath. The Blind Swing of Vermin and Nightshade. I am living death, sacrificing crops to the gnawing weevils, welts upon coral veins of madness cursed. Within my core, there is a savage beast and vermin squirming in vats of nightshade. My crown is a sky of ash, raining the cymbals that clash in the echoes. My raised palms are the prayers of spears puncturing layers of gristle in the eternal blink of unleashed rage. Too many times I have opened the black mass of wrath, tormentors of my inner peace, leaking sewage upon fields of edelweiss. Self-destruction blooms in the back alley of my brownstone exhale. I am split open with every blind swing of a bloodthirsty sickle, craving the marrow in the pit of stones. I'm a soul damned to pirouette beneath the prism of knives juggled. End poem.
Damn. Well, that I think that covers Wrath pretty well. I also like you have a knack for doing it, making like these strong characters, like especially female characters, and which I am living death, sacrificing crops to the gnawing weevils, wealth upon the coral veins of Mandis cursed. And where is that one part? Oh, my crown is a sky of ash, raining the cymbals that clash in the echoes. That I was like, whoa, when I heard that part. That I was very envious indeed. You have a great mind when it comes to really displaying like raw power and yet in a beautiful and creative way. And then too many times I have opened the black mass of wrath, you know, and it's like, I think about all the times that I would like to have done that, you know, like I just wanted to just let everything go and just let it all come out. But, you know, us as people, we try to refrain from such because, you know, many things can happen, but to be able to just live vicariously through this character and just unleash all this chaos upon everybody so openly and freely and angrily is awesome. So thanks for sharing that, Pam. What were your thoughts?
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh wow! I'm envious. Of course, this is just wonderful, and I know it takes years of learning. I understand that this kind of talent is there, but it has to be nurtured, and it has to be refined. But that picture, oh my good gracious me, what on earth are those things doing? Get them away from you immediately. I hate those things. Ugh. Yes, so you've worked that picture to the very bone as far as I'm concerned. You've taken every little nuance from it and made something so interesting and so clever. But within my core there is a savage beast and vermin squirming in vats of nightshade. Oh, creepy. Yes, I loved it. I thought it was very, very, very clever and beautifully written. And it bounced along beautifully too. There was no hesitation. There was no seeing you reaching for words. They were there at your beck and call, which is wonderful. So thank you for sharing that with us.
Thank you so much.
Indeed.
And great show tonight, Robert.
Yeah, we have 1 minute left, so I'm going to close it up. Thank you for sharing that, Pam, and thank you, everybody, for sharing your wonderful, wonderful work. I will make a part two of this show, but it won't be right after this one. I have an idea for my next show, but there will be a continuation of The Cold. So we will be delving into that. And like I said, thanks, Casey and others, for being on the board and supporting us. And thanks for everybody. To everyone that wrote and got inspired, and for everyone that read and commented on each other's works. Just remember that you all are always welcome in the solace of shadows. I hope everyone has a good night and a great new year.
Good night, everybody.